Hello.
Good to you.
Would you please start by telling me your full name, the date, the time, and your location?
Sure, my name is Melanie Hill. It's July 5th, 2021. It is around 12:15 p.m. Eastern, and I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
And do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons license, attribution, non-commercial share alike?
Yes, I do.
Could you please start by introducing yourself to anyone who might find themselves listening to this? What might you want them to know about you and the place that you're speaking from?
Well, hi there. I'm Melanie Hill. I'm a life transition coach and trauma survivor from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm really focused on mental health, and the pandemic really stretched my ability to deal with the way that I had been dealing with my mental health.
I'd like to start by asking, how do you understand the word pandemic? What does it come to mean to you?
It's become to mean something that spread wide and affects the nation or nations as a whole. And we don't have any say so in how it's going to affect us. It's like trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma, revisited upon people with no consent. Yeah.
To the extent that you're comfortable sharing, would you say something about what your experiences of health and healthcare infrastructure were like prior to COVID-19?
So I'm legally disabled. I've had a lot of time in the healthcare system. I was able to get the help that I needed when I needed before the pandemic. It was a lot easier for me to make appointments, to see my doctors, to get the help that I needed, the medicine I needed. It was just so much easier to feel like I was able to function on a daily basis because things were so accessible, and it made my life almost like livable. Because again, I have emotional disabilities, but I also have physical disabilities. And so it was very stable for me to be able to get the help that I needed when I needed it before the pandemic.
And would you say a little bit more about what your day-to-day was looking like prior to the pandemic?
Prior to the pandemic, my day-to-day life was actually a lot. It was a lot varied depending on the day. So I live a different life than many people do. Again, I'm legally emotionally disabled and I'm actually on disability. But because I run my organization Stronger Than My Struggles, I ran into someone who wanted to greatly impact the way that I was able to help trauma survivors like myself. And that gave me a different lifestyle than the one I had been living for so many years with my disabilities. So my days were so varied because I was able to travel, shop, dine out. I was living a life of leisure and luxury in between my doctor's appointments and the way that I was helping my clients. I was always on the go. In fact, people called me the Ebony Goddess on the go. And it was like every other week I was flying somewhere, I was traveling, I was speaking at events, I was helping survivors across the country, or I was attending some kind of class. And then it was such a freeing experience because I had been so deep in my disability for so long that when this benefactor came and the money that they provided was able to change the quality of my life, I was able to live again freely in a way I hadn't lived for years. I was living for like 3 years, like right before the pandemic hit, like better than I had lived in years because I've been disabled since 2010.
Would you provide a bit of context for anyone listening to this about what Stronger Than My Struggles is?
Sure. So Stronger Than My Struggles is an organization that I started in 2017, basically to help myself deal with the trauma that I had experienced when I walked into my therapist's office one day after 7.5 years of therapy, and she simply said, "I no longer take your insurance." I thought that like life was over, and then I realized that I had to be stronger than my struggles, including losing my therapist. And it made me realize that we needed a place where we could have people who listened to us, cared about us, connected to us, and it wasn't about the money. And so with me starting stronger than my struggles, it was a way to connect to trauma survivors and people who suffer from physical and mental instabilities like myself, just to let them know that there was a place that they could go and that someone would care and they didn't have to worry about us walking away because of the money. And so I've started, you know, being able to coach people, and I have classes, and I've actually just paired up with Morgan State University to teach my therapeutic writing shop to youth during this post-pandemic, in the middle of the pandemic phase. I don't know what we're doing right now. It feels like we're, some people are post-pandemic because we just went mask off here in the US, but well, where I am, we just went mask off. And so it's like post-pandemic, but it still feels like we're in the pandemic, and it's such a weird thing. But Stronger Than My Struggles has been instrumental through the pandemic because I was able to do a COVID relief fund with the benefactor's money. We were able to help struggling parents during a Christmas time. We bought Christmas gifts from aid for 80 kids from here to Canada. Right now we're doing a $5,000 scholarship for people studying in the health and wellness industries. And so again, just the pandemic has been able to give Stronger Than My Struggles a better way to serve our community.
And thinking more sort of personally, going back to the day-to-day living, how have you had to adapt day-to-day life in the pandemic?
Well, the pandemic stole my life. As I said, I had just started to live again. I was so severely disabled before 2019 that I really was not living. My life was consisting of laying around on my heating pads, my ice pads, back and forth to the doctors, feeling as if I was crippled. And so when the benefactor came in 2018 and the money started to change again, the quality of my life, by 2019, I was able to move differently. I was able to get around more. I was able to start living and traveling again for the first time since maybe 2009 or 10. And so I had just started to live free. My day-to-day life, it just changed so dramatically because of the pandemic. It went from me canceling so many trips. Like, I had trips planned every other week, vacations out of the country, all types of things, and things got held up. And I had, my tour had to be canceled. I founded the first ever Black Mental Health Awareness Tour in 2019 was our first year, but 2020, we couldn't do the tour. 2021, didn't do the tour. And so it's just, it took my quality of life. I could no longer go out. So many places were closed. I had gotten used to getting massages regularly. I had a membership at the Four Seasons Spa. The spa was no longer doing massages for at least 3 months. It just, it changed everything. Like, it took me back to feeling stuck, like when I was deep in my disability.
I'd be interested in hearing a bit about what you remember first hearing about the pandemic, when it hit your radar, what your initial reactions were like.
So it's so funny because the pandemic became something that was in my sphere of consciousness right after I suffered a severe illness. So I was traveling in the beginning of 2020. I went to New York in January. I went to California in February. In early March, I got severely sick and I didn't know what was going on with me. I was down for days, and eventually I had to rush myself to the hospital in the middle of the night. And for the first time ever, I was so sick that they rushed me in the back before they even took my insurance. And they had me on oxygen and they're doing x-rays, and I had no clue what was going on. And then about a week and a half later, after I had been diagnosed with a unknown viral infection was the first time I heard about COVID. And everyone started talking about this thing and how it had taken over New York and then California. And I was like, I just came home from these two places. And then it was so funny because the medicine that I ended up being put on right after this unknown viral infection, I was immediately diagnosed with lupus and put on hydroxychloroquine, which is the medicine they were giving COVID patients. And so it just was, you know, weird to me that I had this severe illness that I think almost killed me. And only to be diagnosed with an unknown viral infection for 2 weeks later, there to be this disease that is killing people all around me and me to be on the same medication as it.
And how has your reaction changed over time?
I think over the, what has it been, almost 2 years now, a year and a half of the pandemic, my reaction has changed. Probably the best way I could equate it is to the stages of grief. You know, at first it was just like disbelief and, you know, getting around to the point of acceptance and then trying to get around to, you know, living your life again. And it's just the stages of grief would be the best way to explain it. It's like, we all went through like a nationwide depression at first. Like, you know, we weren't trying to understand what was happening. Like we went through stages of disbelief as a nation. Like we're still going to go do this and this and this. And then, you know, you get the reports of families dying because they had a party. And it just, you know, you, at one point you finally get to around to being apathetic of it. Like at this point, we know that people are still going to die. Like, it's not like the pandemic is gone, but we're so tired of not living. It's almost as if we don't care. Like, we, so many of us feel like our lives were taken anyway, that the risk of living life is almost worth, you know, going back out, because who wants to live in a house until they die? It is such a weird dichotomy to be able to process what your life is worth, you know?
In addition to COVID-19, 2020 and 2021 have been pretty big years in a lot of respects. And I'm wondering what some of the most significant issues have been on your mind over the last 2 years.
Well, I think in the last 2 years, of course, the biggest thing was getting Trump out of office. Having a president that we couldn't trust while going through such a huge nationwide crisis was unimaginable for many of us. I know I myself felt as if he didn't care and that he was using people as guinea pigs and trying to stop actual progress. So it was scary. It was terrifying, actually. So getting him out of office was a huge, huge thing this year. I also think that another huge thing was the fact that we had this vaccination being rushed and pushed at us. It's a scary thing when we're so used to doctors and scientists taking such time and care with things that are going in our body, and yet they're pushing a vaccination that barely had a year to be developed and tested. And we don't know the lasting consequences of this vaccination that they're nearly trying to force on people. And it's terrifying. Those for me were the biggest things, were getting back to a place where the nation felt safe so that we could deal with this pandemic together. And then understanding that, you know, this vaccination is a terrifying thing, and some people don't have an option of being able to take it, like nurses and doctors. And even now, you know, they're mandating it in colleges and universities. And it's terrifying that some people will miss out on opportunities to better and enhance their lives because they choose to not be vaccinated. So again, these things have been really big for me.
Would you be willing to talk a little bit more about the fear related to a sense of there being, I'm struggling with the wording here a bit, the like imperative for people to be vaccinated and what that means in terms of feeling like there's no choice, if that's what I'm hearing properly.
Well, yeah, I mean, for a lot of people, they feel they have no choice because it boils down to them being able to be their family or not, whether or not they accept this vaccination that they're being based on the fact that you want to feed your family. And it's like, what's your family worth to you? So that's a skip there, where the job can force you to have to put something really untested and unknown in your body. And you have really no say-so if you want to take care of your family. Because if you file for unemployment after you voluntarily not do what your job asks, it's pretty much like quitting, not being fired. So again, it's a rough situation. It's a thin line between having freedom and being able to provide for your family. And then again, you know, if you're of minority like myself, you know, I'm a Black woman. If you're a minority like myself, you may think of things like Tuskegee when you hear of this vaccination. And you may remember how much the government has done that has been untrustworthy before, and how our community, I don't know if it's happening in every community, but I live in Baltimore. I live in a city where there are 400 murders per year. I live in a underserved, at times impoverished city. There's so much money here, but there's so many rundown homes and so many homeless people. And the idea that I live in a state where there are people who are starving, living on the streets, yet my state is doing a lottery where they are giving away $40,000 per week to two or three winners of people who have taken the vaccination and registered. And I don't understand where this money's coming from. And I don't understand how we gotten around to paying people thousands of dollars to take a vaccination and not understanding that there's something behind it. So it's very, you know, terrifying in many ways. If you look at the way that they're encouraging, you know, they're forcing people to do it at their jobs. Now in colleges and universities have instituted policies where students and people can't be on campus if they're not vaccinated. And then here you have an impoverished city finding money to give away to people just for taking the vaccination. And I'm not talking pennies. So, you know, there's something that's just not right about this.
I'm curious, what does the word health mean to you?
What does health mean to me? It means the well-being of my body and mind.
With that in mind, what are some of the things that you want for your health and the health of others around you? And how do we get there? What kinds of changes would we need to see as a culture for that to be attainable?
Well, first and foremost, I want to see mental health being brought into the forefront of education, work environments, school environments, and day-to-day life. I think that the fact that we're not taught about mental health and wellness at a young age is so detrimental to us as a society, which has been proven by the pandemic. The fact that during the pandemic, we had to make alcohol an essential thing is terrifying, because we have so many alcoholics that had the liquor stores closed down, then we would have had hospitals too full of alcoholics going through detox. And then they were able to take care of the pandemic patients. Like, we literally as a country started delivering alcohol from restaurants to homes during a pandemic. That is so sad. We rather do that than deal with people's mental health. So I think that in the forefront of health, we should have more mental health education and resources. Again, along health and wellness, I think that yoga, meditation, and such should be introduced in the schools at a young age. We take kids to the gym and we have them running around, climbing ropes, doing things that they'll never do again in real life and that won't benefit them. However, meditation, things like yoga, things like Tai Chi, things that increase their mental aspects of health and wellness along with their physical aspects of health and wellness. I want to see more public emphasis put on health and wellness that isn't based around a big sponsor having an event or expo. I want to see it more focused on day-to-day life and understanding how much mental and physical health go together.
Thinking in the sort of municipal scale of Baltimore, maybe the state level of Maryland, how do you perceive the current medical infrastructure to be handling COVID-19 now, but also thinking about the sort of pre-vaccine period of time?
I don't honestly think I can answer that because I try to stay away from the political aspects of things because, again, we've had a president for the last 4 years that made even thinking about politics hard and sickening. So for the first year of the pandemic, like, I was really tuned out of even what we were doing locally because I just was staying in the house. I was not aware of how our medical facilities and even we had regular like updates with COVID, but again, it was just so much. And because my mental health was affected, I couldn't handle the processing of it. So I don't want to answer a question that I don't really have the answer to.
Thank you so much for that honesty. And I think it is a lot of people had to tune out. I think that's a very real reaction to the moment. Would you tell me what safety means to you?
Safety is the security of knowing that things are going to be okay, no matter what the situation, that you're going to make it home in one piece.
Under COVID-19, there's been this really narrow and small understanding of safety in relationship to the virus. I'm wondering, sort of in that like tiny framework, how have you been determining what feels safe for you and how have you been negotiating that with others in your life?
Excuse me. Well, I think in the beginning, you know, well, I'll say again that it moved in phases, like dealing with the stages of grief. So in the beginning, I was hypervigilant, you know, it's like, I'm never coming out the house. I don't want to associate with people. However, I noticed that I was still door dashing food in pretty regularly. So I was still taking calculated risks. And I found that food was worth the risk for me, whereas hanging out with my friends wasn't. And then I started to move closer to wanting to not be so alone because my mental health was being severely affected. And so I started to pick and choose like a few friends that I didn't mind spending time with unmasked because I was not very keen on wearing masks and I didn't go anywhere for a long time that I had to wear one. Like it was very weird, but it felt like being punished, you know. Again, I was living such a free life before the pandemic. I had just started to live again. And so, you know, it was hard for me to just go into this, what felt like a cocoon and stop living. And so I started to take more calculated risks during the summer, especially because the first summer during the pandemic, they made it feel like it was safer to go out. And so I did a lot more in the summer. And then as it got colder, you know, I started to shy away from my friends again and not go out. The restaurants were still closed. But as things started to open, I started to take again more calculated risks. And so it was based on how my mental state was doing at the time, how much interaction I felt I really needed, and when I needed to get out the house and away from my own thoughts. You know, I would take calculated risks based on where I was in my personal journey through COVID.
I'd like to follow up on your use of the word feeling punished. Could you talk a bit more about what it was that made it feel like a punishment?
Well, there were just so many different rules. And, you know, at first they were like curfews and there were lines to stand in stores. You know, it was such a weird thing because I've never experienced it. And again, with me being a woman who had moved into a place of being a lady of leisure and luxury, having the things that I wanted when I wanted had become my norm. So having to cancel all of my trips, having to deal with the fact that money was just being, you know, moved around and on hold, and feeling as if I had no control over these things, being stuck in my community where I was, again, traveling every other week, but now I'm stuck with my neighbors and, you know, they're not the type of people I would normally choose to spend my time with. So I felt punished, and who I had to keep company with because they was the closest people to me. And it everything, like not being able to go to your favorite restaurants, not being able to go out to eat when you want and dance and, you know, it sucked. It felt like you were on the worst punishment of your life. And the threat was, if you break this punishment, you'll die.
When you started making the calculated risks to spend time with people as a part of social need, what kinds of conversations would you have with them to determine sort of who you felt safe with and what that interaction would look like for you all?
Well, I definitely wanted to know what kind of lifestyle they had been living during the pandemic, how often they had been spending time with people outside of their homes, if they had a stable work life, because again, I don't work, I'm legally disabled. So I'm not as exposed to so many people as a lot of other people. So I definitely wanted to know if they had a regular work life and how many people they were exposed to, how risky they had been in their personal interaction with others. That was really a deciding factor on how I interacted with people.
You had mentioned earlier that Stronger Than My Struggles and other parts of your philanthropic work have expanded and changed over COVID-19. And talked about that in terms of cancellations. I was wondering if you would say something about the importance of services such as yours during a pandemic.
Well, you know, I realized exactly how important we were. Because again, there are so few mental health resources, and then they're so tied up because there are so many people who need them. And with there being so few resources and so many people stretching them to the limits, there has to be these ancillary things that come to the community and allow them a place to be heard, seen, and know that they're not alone in the gap of getting therapy. Even I started going back to therapy during a pandemic. And the first thing my new therapist did was apologize to me because there was going to be such a long time in between our initial visit and our next appointment. You know, and it's a sad thing, but that's what made me again realize just how important people like me and my organization are, because it really needs to be things that stand in the gap. And we as a community need to be able to help each other and to see each other in their pain, because as a community, our pain all affects one another. And so we need to have these resources.
What does community mean to you?
It means a group of like-minded, like-actioned people who support one another.
I'd love to hear how you're feeling about the immediate future.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that this pandemic is winding down. As I said earlier, here in Maryland, we've gone mask free officially as of July 1st. There are businesses that have the right to still request that people wear masks and things like that. But the governor has allowed us to have some freedom. But again, they did this last summer. You know, last summer it was, you know, so it's weird, but I'm hoping that we're moving out of the pandemic finally. I'm starting to travel again. I'm getting on it the first time in over a year this month. I have trips planned for the next 4 months, so I'm hopeful that I'm not risking my life just to travel again. But at the same time, we have to start moving towards, you know, our future at some point. We can't just sit still. And so it's just, I'm hopeful that we're moving out of this and towards normality again so that we can start to live. Because again, I had been so disabled for so long. And just for the year and a half or so before the pandemic started, I had just started to live again. I had just started to feel free. I had just started to understand who I am at woman at this point in my life, and to be forced to sit back down for the last year and a half and down my growth in so many different areas was, again, as I said, it felt like a punishment. So I'm just hopeful that we're moving out of the pandemic so that I can start moving towards this future that I've been building for myself and moving towards being able to have normality again.
Can I ask where that hopefulness is stemming from? So, is it feeling safer for you to travel now than it was earlier? And if so, what's providing that feeling of safety?
I don't even know if or if it's feeling fed up. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's time. I can't honestly answer, you know, why July, not June. You know, there's no real answer here. It's just time. And I think I got to a point where I finally decided that whatever God wants is what's going to happen. And I can't keep hiding from my destiny. If I'm going to be taken out by COVID, I'm going to be taken out by COVID. If I'm going to be taken out by a flight, I'm going to be taken out by a flight or a car or whatever, because I choose to live as a woman who believes in having a destiny. I believe that everything that I do is ordered and ordained. And, you know, it's weird because I've been through so much, but I really feel like everything that I do was already pre-designed, and I'm on my destined path. And whatever is supposed to happen is going to happen. It's like I said earlier, you know, I stayed in the house for the duration of the pandemic. However, I DoorDash food almost every day. If the pandemic was meant to hit me, it could have hit me by whoever I invited to my house to drop off food. So, you know, I just to be cognizant of the idea that I believe that my life is predetermined. I can't keep hiding because people tell me to.
What are some of your desires for a longer term future?
I want to travel the whole world. Like, I want to see every continent. I especially want to go to Africa. I'm planning to go in the beginning of 2022 to this place called Giraffe Manor in Nairobi, to be able to take Stronger Than My Struggles further. We already have a global community of my global community. Pack the world. In the mental health field, you don't have to have a certain level of education to people in the health and wellness industry. And to bring this more into a community-based thing, I really want to see myself become the glamorous diva that I've always known I was. And again, you know, I used to question how I was born into a life that did not fit who I thought I was. And as life continued to happen and I'm on my preety, I've been through so many different versions of me, but never did I imagine I'd stop at this version of myself where, you know, finances aren't an issue, there are no limits, life is abundant, and I'm moving closer towards this version was, even when it seemed impossible, because it was predetermined. So, you know, I'm prayerful that I'm able to step into everything that I was meant to be.
You've touched on some of this already, but I wanted to create a little more space asking, what are some of the things that you've been doing to take care of yourself over the last 2 years? And like, how have they been working? So not just the what, but kind of the why behind choosing those methods and what the benefits have been.
Well, I had been going to the spa 2 to 3 days a week, and then the spa stopped doing all of the services. So I hired someone to come to my home twice a week. I needed that peace of having massages for my body 2 hours at a time, really, because I had fibromyalgia and I have lupus and I suffer from chronic pain. So I couldn't allow the pandemic to steal what was keeping me healthy. One of the other things that I did was in my relationship of 3 years. It was important for me because it felt like it was already a dead relationship before the pandemic. And in the pandemic, it just got lonelier. And the last thing that I needed in the middle of a pandemic is to feel even more alone when I've supposedly had someone. So that was really important for me to end that relationship and to start the healing process so that I could made me feel important, which I did. And another thing that I did during the pandemic to cope was a lot of writing. I host a global therapeutic writing workshop every week. And so that's really helped me as well as others to cope, because we go through writing prompts and processing our actions and our goals and our dreams and our traumas together. And so that's been really cool for me. I've spent a lot of time coloring too, because coloring helps me feel like things are in order. When I don't have control over other things, I can control what goes on that page. And so I love to color.
Going back to the relationship that you ended, would you talk a little bit about what partnership and ending partnership has meant to you during the pandemic?
Well, for me, partnership, it was really lacking. I think that partners are people who meet each other halfway, you know, carry each other's slack, people who show up for each other, who are on the same page, have shared in common goals. And I wasn't getting that in my relationship. And so it was a constant feeling of being let down, of not being heard, of not having someone who had your back. And I had to let that go, because in the middle of a pandemic, when we're dealing with a situation where we could lose our lives any day, those things are important. And so I had to hurt myself by forcing myself to put the emotions to the side to deal with the reality of the situation. And the reality of the situation is, every time I told that person we were a team, it was a lie, because I was the only partner on that team and it wasn't working for me.
This is my second last question, and it's a little strange. So we know we're in this moment where there's all kinds of scientific and medical research that's been happening. What is it that you think people in the humanities and the social sciences could be doing right now to help us understand the social effects of the pandemic?
Well, they could be talking in more layman's terms for one. Like they're using so many big words and things that they want to, it's more like they want to put fear in people than to ease people's fears, which is what I would think that they want to do. But it feels the opposite. And so I think that they could change their language. I think that they could have more public forums. I think instead of speaking at people, they could speak to people. I think that it could be a whole different way of reaching the people. And I think that bribing people to take a medication is asinine and negligent because, again, we don't know the lasting effects of this. So it's like they're paying you off in the beginning to poison you. So, yeah, I think that, we should not be paying people to take a vaccination.
And here's my last question. So this is an oral history interview, and I'd like to invite you to think of a historian far enough in the future that they never lived this moment. So they have no experiential knowledge. And if you could tell them what kinds of stories are really important, which ones need to be told, what can't be forgotten, what would you tell them?
And Moderna vaccinations. The Johnson and Johnson vaccination had to be pulled and stopped. So I think that, we need to talk about this because Johnson and Johnson has a history of releasing products that they've been later sued for damaging people. I think that we can't not talk about how each separate country handled it. And again, that might have been because we had a leader in place that the public didn't trust. I think that it's important to talk about how mental health services and resources were expanded at such a large rate during a pandemic, and the fact that it was such a necessary thing so that we never forget how important it is to make this everyday life. I think that we should not forget how people found out that we're capable of working from home and not slaving ourselves the way that our jobs have been taught, teaching us to do. We found that people were able to work from home, be able to be there for their kids and have more fluidity in their lives and not be chained to their desk in the office. And I hope that people stick with that in some ways because it really allows people to be there for their families at the same time.
I want to thank you so much for everything that you've shared with me today and anyone who might find themselves listening to this. And at this point, I just want to ask if there's anything that you want to share that these questions haven't given you the space to share, to please claim that space now.
No, I think that it was a really great opportunity to a lot of different aspects of the pandemic, especially for me, the mental health awareness around it, and how important it is to maintain these resources for longevity. I think that if anything we learned during a pandemic is how screwed up as a nation we are. That we should not be a nation that alcohol should be essential during a pandemic. We should not be a nation where we have money to bribe people to take a vaccination, but not to get people off the streets. So I think it's important to look at the changes that we were able to shift and create during a pandemic and see how we can shift it in real life.
Thank you so much.